Welcome to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, and in the next hour, we'll focus on mindfulness, bringing our awareness to the present moment without judgment. Developing and deepening our capacity for mindfulness throughout our daily life is essential for reducing fearful and negative thinking, for letting go of the stories we tell ourselves that keep us stuck in place, and for transforming our relationship to ourselves, to others, to the world. Join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm really happy that you joined me here today. So as I say in the intro, the purpose of our show is to talk about mindfulness, but ideally, to the extent possible in your life, to allow the hour that you spend here to be an exercise or a practice in mindfulness, a space where you can bring your attention and awareness to this present moment, give yourself time to relax into this moment, ideally, allow yourself to find places in your experience that resonate with the topics that I talk about, and all of that in the service of becoming more fully developed students of our own mind, to be able to see where our mind goes and to understand ourselves, and in doing so, noticing the places where we get stuck, where we're filled with fearful and negative thinking and ways to then let go of some of those stories. The topics are intended to support you in your mindfulness journey, and mindfulness is bringing our attention and awareness to the present moment without judgment. That's a simple goal, difficult to achieve, but its value is that mindfulness practices bring us greater internal peace. And I'm going to quote the Dalai Lama on this because he says it better than I do. If you can imagine, peace in the world depends on peace within. If we have that, we can approach problems in a spirit of compassion, dialogue, and respect for the rights of others. Always a better solution than resorting to a use of weapons or force, and I would add either literally or metaphorically. External disarmament, he says, depends on inner disarmament. So today's topic is maybe disarming ourselves from our relentless to-do lists. But to-do lists, like last week's topic of gift giving, to-do lists are not all bad. I am particularly aware at the moment of being in the midst of a particular set of to-do items on my list. I've mentioned that we're doing a house project, and we're at that place where things are really starting to come together. Not that the work has started. There's an amazing amount of preliminary work that gets done. And I'm at that place though where I'm remembering what I really love about the process. A lot of decisions have been made, but there's a lot more to accomplish in terms of details, phone calls and emails, trips to various stores, and my inner project manager is having a really good time. I've never had a job that's where my title was project manager, but I have to say, whether I was a college professor or an administrator, I really was doing a lot of project-oriented thinking, which to me is taking a situation and moving it by increments from point A to point C. And it's incredibly satisfying. When I was teaching, I thought of my syllabus this way, and I thought of the semester. I wanted students to be able to feel and understand that they had accomplished X by the end of the semester. So a syllabus is my roadmap for getting us from point A to point what that is, that sense of accomplishment. I've organized conferences and group processes of all types, and it's filled with details. It's the room assignment and the arrangement of the chairs and snacks for later and the agenda, and I just enjoy all of that. Gay Hendricks, who wrote a wonderful book called The Big Leap, talks about being in your zone of genius, which is, of course, the highest level that one can achieve. And I don't necessarily think that project managing is my zone of genius, but it is for sure my zone of excellence, which is a step below it. And it does give me a lot of satisfaction. And I recommend that book, The Big Leap, if you're feeling stuck at work and trying to discern that process of discerning, what am I really good at versus what makes my heart sing, is really helpful. Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap. But I am organized enough, I'm just detail-oriented enough, and I have strong communication skills. And so that has allowed me, when I'm project managing, whether at home or at work, to kind of keep people on track and to keep things moving in a mostly positive direction. And then there was yesterday. So I had to navigate a website for cabinet drawers and doors. We like to replace ours. and not replace the cabinets as a whole. So I got to the website and what I really wanted to know, I had just one simple, I thought, question, which was, how much is this going to cost? Because it's a trade-off, right? Should we just get them all painted and keep the cabinet drawers or door end doors, or can we take them off, donate them to a wonderful organization here in Tacoma called Second Use that can put them to use in somebody else's house and get ones that we like better? I just wanted to know, because I had no idea, not even a clue how much this would cost, and that matters. So I had the measurements, which I knew that was important. So there I'm starting off really well, had the measurements. But then I was confronted, as I started to put in the information, with questions about hinges and what kind of hinges, and something called a sluice or a slice or silus, I don't know, an S word that I didn't recognize. And then there are boring holes. I mean, do you want boring holes or don't you? I don't know. And edges. I hadn't thought about the edges. I don't know. I couldn't get the basic cost without making all these decisions. Hinges and boring holes and edges. Oh my. And here came that familiar feeling, right? In the pit of my stomach. I would say it was a cup of dread, a tablespoon of anxiety, a soupçon of fear rolling around, and then the voice, right? That voice, and it's as if that voice is on my shoulder and it's crawling up my neck and into my ear. You don't know what you're doing. You're gonna screw this up. What made you think you could do this? Suddenly, that flow state I'd been feeling, that moving and grooving, getting things done, checking them off my list, was at risk. It was like the walls of a dam were closing on it, and I could feel my sense of competence and accomplishment absolutely fading. And then I remembered, and I allowed myself to practice. Breathe, I told myself. Slow down, I said. It's okay. You can figure this out. Keep reading. Think carefully. And that allowed me to remember something important, which is there are people I can ask for help. So I started to write my questions out. But most of all, I asked myself to slow down and to stay present. The slowing down was really crucial for me because it's what helps me get to what I like to call, what a lot of people would call, the witness seat. When I'm struggling with strong emotions, especially self-doubt, if I can get to the witness seat, if I can watch what's happening, as opposed to simply be overwhelmed by what's happening, both the feelings in my body and mind, the slowing down is easier to do, of course, when I turn my attention to my breath. So last week, I talked about gift giving as a wonderful thing that can go badly wrong, or at least in our minds it can, if we practice gift giving as an experience to test a relationship, to see if what other person's feelings are about us, to gauge them, or to evaluate ourselves whether or not we're good people. And in a similar way, getting stuff done can be done with joyful energy. It can feel great. It can enhance our sense of well-being and purposefulness. And it can be a great source of great suffering. Distinguishing between these two states, and my experience as demonstrates that it's easy to slide from a state of feeling quite competent and accomplished to really feeling like a fool. It's easy to slide from one to the other, but noticing, distinguishing between the flow state and the suffering allows us to, is better done when we start by slowing down. And slowing down, as I say, is more easily achieved when I focus on my breath. So let's do a breathing exercise and then we'll return to our topic. So this is the one where we bring our hands to our heart center on an inhale. We interlace our fingers and push our palms outward on an exhale. We pull our hands over our head on an inhale and then we let go on an exhale. And I realize my sleeves are a little bit snug. So okay, so here we go. I hope you'll join me. Inhale. Third time, last time. Okay. I like to put breathing on my to-do list. I hope you do too. So what we're talking about today our to-do lists and how we navigate them, and when they can be a source of joy and when they can be a source of suffering. And personally, I love a good to-do list because to-do lists help me. I can be forgetful. I've been known to procrastinate. And there are simply some tasks I would prefer to never do. And a list helps me with all of that. It helps me remember the little things. It helps me create a sense of momentum. If I write it down, sometimes more than once, sometimes for weeks on end, you know, it gets carried from this week's list to next week's lists. I might finally get around to doing things that I would really rather not do. You know, taxes, doctor's appointments, calling a stranger to get information about something that I don't really understand that well in the first place. Sometimes I have really good experiences with lists. They make a huge difference in my life, and seeing it on in front of me is a great way to build momentum and feel good about things, because it matters to get stuff done in life, right? I don't want my life to feel as if I never get anything done. That's a really important feeling, and a to-do list can be a really important tool in making that happen. So we're going to take a break here in the middle of to-do lists and talk a little bit about when a to-do list can go wrong. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
It's your turn to reclaim your life. Experience the unmitigated joy of breathing life into your own passions, into your own purpose, with me, Life Coach Ricky Schwartz, at MyTurnLifeCoaching.com. In the meantime, tune into my show, My Turn Life Coaching, live every second and fourth Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The Dr. Pat Show.
The Dr. Pat Show.
The Dr. Pat Show.
This is it. The energy of heart to heart, mind to mind, love to love. These are the questions that people have and rarely state. When we have an internal transformation and we see things differently, what does it mean to step into the full nature of being a spiritual being? How am I to be? This is it. Every day, you have to do something outrageously positive. It is so absolutely relevant because what I've seen in humanity, despite what's in the headlines, I'm so struck by the heroes that have come forward. I'm just absolutely in awe. The idea generators and superheroes. All of you, you are the best listening audience in the world, and we are bringing it in 2021.
What we've been taught and told is not all there is. Life is all about energy, and the energy you feel is real. Tune into the energy paradigm each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com with Dr. Vic. The energy paradigm is an eye-opening, mind-shifting, transformative, and earth-shattering way to live, work, and do business that will enable you to unlock your magic every day. Visit TheEnergyParadigm.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. We are talking today about to-do lists, what we put on those lists, what they mean to us, when they can slip from helping us have a sense or helping us create a sense in our lives of purposefulness, of doing stuff that's important to us and checking it off a list, versus when they can become an oppressive thing that we cling to that makes it difficult for us to feel good about ourselves, frankly. I've been talking about, I do use to-do lists because it can help me stay on track. And one that I've started using recently that's been kind of fun, and I think it's because it doesn't have a gotta do it quality to it, is a dinner list. I'm the one who makes dinner at our house, and I do enjoy cooking. But despite that, even I can have a day where I, about 4:30, think to myself, ugh, I don't have any good ideas. There's really nothing good in the house. Everything we have is boring. And so I started on Sundays sometimes to make a dinner list. And it's not a commitment. It's just a list of suggestions. I think of them as dinner candidates. And their ingredients and the list, what goes on the list, means that it's something we already have all the ingredients for in the house. So at 4:30 on any given day, I can consult the list and before I feel overwhelmed or demoralized. And it's been great. Again, I don't feel obligated to go with the list. I just realized, and it helps me keep track of kind of what's in the house. In particular, it helps me make use of what my friend Craig calls aspirational vegetables. I think most of us have these, the ones you buy them with good intentions, but you aren't sure necessarily what to do with them, and they keep getting pushed to the back of the fridge until one day you find them and they're wilted and slimy and disgusting. And I don't like to waste food, and I was raised to think that that was a sin. So as aspirational vegetables, if they're on my dinner list, I've already realized how I will incorporate them. They are much more likely to be used. And it reminds me, having the list reminds me that I like to cook and that there are a lot of great ideas out there. And because I then can focus the list on what we already have in the house, it's been particularly helpful during the pandemic because I was in the habit of going out to the store because it's in walking distance and I could go get an ingredient or two. But with the pandemic, I've not wanted to do that. It's not appropriate. And so this really helps me. But as I said, the key for me is that it's suggestions, not obligations. Because I think that sense that what's on our list, whatever the list is a series of obligations can be overwhelming. I think that sense of obligation or the idea that our list shows us what quote unquote normal people or good people do with their time, that's when we get into the zone of a to-do list being tricky. Some to-do lists I might use to measure my days, right? Exercising, grocery shopping, dinner preparation, if I have children, carting them around, maybe deals cut in the workplace, I don't know, countries invaded. I can also use it, though, to measure my life, right? Degrees earned, spouses acquired, houses bought, children born, money made, ladders climbed, right? Most of us have that kind of list in our heads, not only of how we ought to spend this day, but all the days. Of course, we don't use the same criteria necessarily for evaluating all those items. It's the number of items that I get crossed off on the big and small lists. It's the difficulty of the items. It's how much I earn from that item, or it's the perceived prestige of that item. Achievements, accomplishments, small and large, significant and insignificant. How often at the end of a day do I tote them up and give myself a mental gold star for getting a bunch of stuff done? Or more likely, bemoan all that is left to do, all that I avoided, all that had obstacles that prevented me from getting things accomplished. How often am I looking at the entirety of my days and asking myself if my life measures up? If I am my list, and is that what has happened when those lists become so pervasive in our lives and take on such value and importance? Have I become my list? And does that mean that my belief in my value as a person, my right to express an opinion, does it rest on what I can demonstrably achieve, what I can be seen to be doing? When my sense of self is reduced to what I can accomplish, then I get very attached to what I can accomplish. So that, I'm going to sneeze, I realize. Ooh. Or I was thinking, I was right. this sense of being attached to what we can accomplish, and for that sensation to take over our sense of self, the quality of our life and our days, reminds me a story I think I've probably told before about a friend of mine who went with his partner to Paris, and they were out in one of the suburbs, and they had no particular agenda. They were there just to be there, to walk around, to be in a different place, to eat different food, to see things they hadn't seen before. And at some point in the trip, they passed a clothing store, and my friend saw a shirt that he really liked in the clothing store, but he didn't stop to buy it. He just kept going, and he thought he would kind of get back to that store. And it came to the last day of their trip, and he realized not only had he not gotten back to that store, he couldn't find the store. He was getting lost looking for the store. And what was really driving him in terms of his discomfort, his suffering, if you will, was that he hadn't bought not just the shirt, but anything else. That he had just been there, but he hadn't, in a sense, done anything. And that was so hard to rest with, to be comfortable with. But that is not just a funny story a person might tell about their trip to Paris and feeling like because they didn't even buy one souvenir that they didn't accomplish anything. It's that some of us allow our lives to be organized that way of we are what we do. And when we get that attached to our sense of accomplishment, you know, there's very little room for simply allowing things to unfold. It may be difficult to allow ourselves to slow down. I might tell myself that I can't be bothered to ask if what I'm doing is what I want to be doing. I simply don't have time for that. And maybe I have to make some sacrifices, in fact, to get the stuff on that list done. So I want you to think about that for a minute. What have you ever given up in your life in order to accomplish something on your list? Your daily list, your life list, something that you believed you had to accomplish in order to be not a good person maybe, but a legitimate person, like a person of value or worth in any sense. It's not just that we get so attached that we can't allow things to unfold, that we don't take the time, that we don't ask ourselves if this is what we want to be doing, but we also make sacrifices of relationships, of happiness, of money spent, time spent, etc. We waste things because we're so focused on that thing that has to be done. So the list as self requires a kind of grasping or clinging to the list, not for what it says about us, but because it has become us, our resume, our curriculum vitae, our LinkedIn page, our Instagram feed. Are we our list of what we can show the world we have done? I think that's a difficult thing to think about, and it puts us in a kind of squishy space because for many of us, we are so focused on that, and we are proud of the things that are on that list, and rightfully so, right? Those things that have taken hard work and determination, those things that have taken resilience and sacrifices from others, like parents helping us pay for college, perhaps, or partners sacrificing their dreams for ours so that we can have that, not just so we can have the thing on the list, but because we want to accomplish and do for the world, perhaps, something in particular that really matters. But it can also overwhelm us. It can also take the place of and perhaps give us that perspective that without those accomplishments, we are not a person of value. And that's, you know, this is something I say to almost every client that I've ever worked with. You are enough just as you are. But I am not enough just as I am if I am my list. Then I'm only enough if I've accomplished the things on the list either today and tomorrow or for my entire life. So I want to turn then to some ideas from Buddhist philosophy to help us think about this and to help us think about how we might be less attached to what's happening on that list. And I'm going to really focus on the work of Joseph Goldstein. And Goldstein is the co-founder of the Insight Meditation Society. He's a wonderful writer, I'm sure, but I have mostly read his interviews, which are incredibly charming and helpful and insightful and accessible. Maybe that's the word that's most important for my experience. So he gave a talk several years ago now called Buddhism, the Essential Points. And he reminds us in the talk that many times in the suttas, the discourses, the Buddha would say, Whatever has the nature to arise will also pass away. Whatever has the nature to arise will also pass away. And so the kind of question that comes from that is, well, what has the nature to arise? Well, everything has the nature to arise, and therefore everything will pass away. And that's one of those things that, sort of like mindfulness, bringing your attention to the present moment without judgment, it sounds pretty simple. Everything will arise, and therefore everything will pass away, right? Impermanence is the kind of sort of key word for Buddhists. It's not a complex idea, and we see it throughout the course of our day. We know it intellectually. Maybe we even know it kind of deep down, but it is very difficult, and I feel kind of squishy inside even thinking about it when I try to bring that awareness of impermanence into my immediate present moment, like the time passing right now. And it's kind of a funny thing because when I do this podcast, I have in front of me my phone, which where the seconds are ticking off. And then the producer tells me when we're about to go to a break. So the notion that time is passing is extremely present to me when I do this. But I realize that in many parts of my life, I am not within that sense of whatever has the capacity or the nature to arise will pass away. So the suffering comes when is the result then of clinging to something that will inevitably change, and everything will inevitably change. So Goldstein's first example, of course, is something like youth, right? We cling to youth, we valorize youth, we et cetera, but all of us, unless we die young, will get old, right? So everything that has the nature to arise will pass away, and we suffer when we cling to something and want it to stay still. And so we're going to come back and talk about that in the context of our to-do lists, our daily lists, our life lists. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Tune into the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you trying to lose weight, but feel guilty for eating your favorite foods? Feeling deprived and resentful makes for results that aren't sustainable. Join Adrienne Craig every second and fourth Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com for her show, Master Your Mindset for a Weight Loss Breakthrough. Learn to love the journey and watch yourself succeed. For more information about Adrienne or to work with her personally, visit LifeCanyon.com.
You know, marriage is not always easy, but skills that improve communication go a long way. Tune in to the Relationship Rehab Show, Recovering Happiness in Your Love with Nancy Landrum and Dr. Pat each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Nancy is an author and teacher empowering couples to create and sustain loving marriages. Learn to listen, speak, and handle conflict with respect so your love can flourish. To learn more about Nancy and her work, visit NancyLandrum.com.
TheAngelLady.net.
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 1-800-323-1790. 1-800-323-1790.
Sue Storm.
Sue Storm.
TheAngelLady.net.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day, and we love to hear from you. Leave comments and questions for the host to address live, on the air, and get to know the faces behind the voices you love. Just go to Facebook and search for Transformation Talk Radio.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire. And today we're talking about to-do lists, whether it's the to-do list for today or the to-do list for your life, and the way in which a to-do list can give us momentum and focus and a sense of purpose, or it can be an oppressive list of obligations that if we really are committed to them, we cling to them. They give us our sense of meaning and value as people. Because we have them, we choose to sacrifice maybe things. We don't necessarily ask ourselves questions about how we want to be living, but feel this list, whether it's a kind of a culture's list, a family's list, or the one you actually write down in the morning, is so powerful that it is making our decisions for us, and we cling to what that list means. So I've been talking about this in the context then of Joseph Goldstein's reminder to us about the impermanence of reality, and as he quotes the Buddha, whatever has the nature to arise will also pass away. Everything has the capacity or the nature to arise, thus everything can pass away. And so I want to then talk about that, of what does that mean for to-do lists, life ones or daily ones? So I probably mentioned before that my partner and me moved several times in the last, 12 years, three times, in fact, in the last 12 years. And in my life in general, I've moved several times. So this last move, and this was, even though we moved 18 months ago, I was just getting around to some boxes, because they weren't on my to-do list and they weren't urgent. So I was going through a box the other day, and what I noticed was that I now have a box that has several folders in it and notebooks, but mostly file folders from things that have happened. Maybe the earliest one is from 25 to 30 years ago and forward. And they all fit now in one box. I'm not saying that it's my only box, but of all of the, I have a PhD, so you can imagine how much paper I've had in my life at certain times, or how many books, how many file folders full of class notes, et cetera, and just the ephemera of life. I'm sentimental, so I keep cards that people have sent me, et cetera. There have been times when I've had a lot more boxes, and every move, I've taken some things out of the box. And a lot of those things are objects that memorialize accomplishments, things that were on my to-do list, in other words. Things that were very important to me, or they never would have been in the box in the first place, right? They'd already been sifted the first time they went into a box, and they've been sifted many times since. And it just struck me that I was, in a way, boiling things down to the few things that have mattered the most to me, perhaps, that I'm not sure what I think that box. I always ask myself this question with the boxes. Who is ever going to look at this but me? But I will say that in looking through that box, I did have a lot of really powerful and positive and hurtful in some places memories, good things and bad things. I was really very aware, though, of what I have kept over the years, what I've gotten rid of over the years, events and experiences that I've forgotten ever happened until I see the item in that box. And it was a great opportunity to remember that things are impermanent, right? That all of those events have happened, have come and gone. Many of the relationships that were connected to those events have come and gone. Thanks to Facebook, some of them still exist, but not in the same form. My relationship to whatever the thing was, the achievement or the accomplishment or the experience, that too has come and gone. And the thing, the place I visited, that's changed as well. So a box full of our old stuff can sometimes be a way to really slow down and say, what has mattered to me over the course of my life has changed. What I do with my time has changed. So when I think about this impermanence, the idea of impermanence and the to-do list, I want to ask, what does it mean that they inevitably change? The value, the relationship I have to those things on that list, why does it matter that they change? Well, it matters because in the moment, not when they're 20 years on in the box, but when in the moment, we sometimes cling to them. And clinging to them and what we perceive their value to be can cause suffering. But you might be asking or thinking of things that you've achieved and saying, but do they really change? Like, you have a particular degree or maybe a relationship with someone. And I would ask you to think about that. You know, what's something you've thought of in your life as having timeless value and meaning in your life? And can you really say that nothing about it has changed, right? That it doesn't have that quality of arising and passing. So I've been thinking about that because I wanted to say this some point today, that I'm really working through this idea. It's as I said, simple, but it's hard to really bring that deep understanding in the immediate moment of impermanence into our daily life. So I'm working through this as I'm talking to you about it. So so the first thing I thought of was my relationship to my mother. And we were very close, but that sentence is very unhelpful if you really wanted to know me or her or our relationship. We were very close. What does that mean? It wasn't the same when I was 5 as when I was 50, right? She's passed now. She died 6 years ago. That doesn't mean my relationship with her doesn't exist, but it certainly has transformed. So, okay, people who die, that's an easy one. Of course it's changed. Or somebody you knew all your life. Sure, it changed over the course of your life. I have a degree. I have advanced degrees. That was really important to me at one point. It's still important to me in the sense that I can look back at that and it's evidence to myself when I feel bad about myself, maybe, that I can accomplish something that I set out to accomplish. But I don't use it in the same way that I did. It isn't essential to what I do anymore. In some cultural way, it's essential to what I know, and that's important. So even that degree, that piece of paper, that body of knowledge, the knowledge itself has changed. It's transformed. It's evolved. My understanding of it has as well. Its relevance to my daily life has as well. There's real change in all of that. If I think of everything that's ever been on my to-do list, whether it's a doctor's appointment or what I'm having for dinner or making changes to this house, we did a lot of work on our previous house. We don't even live there anymore. And some of the changes that we made, my suspicion is that the people who bought the house changed them again. Even that. I mean, it was concrete. It was literally concrete. It's changed. So Goldstein says that the real transformation of our minds and the deepening of wisdom is when we are seeing the changing nature of reality directly in our experience. And he has this idea that I think is really helpful in trying to bring greater capacity for noticing the changing nature of reality in the present moment into our experience. He calls them NPMs, which are noticings per minute. And he says, you know, if you're doing this in the context of meditation in particular, where the effort and the goal is to pay attention to your breath, to slow your thoughts so that you are really aware of what thoughts arise, you're really noticing what's happening. He said, you know, at first, the number of things you notice per minute might be pretty low. He estimates maybe it's 5 to 10, 5 to 10 different things that you might notice in a minute. But as your practice deepens, he writes, our mindfulness gets stronger and we are really attending to things very carefully. And NPMs go way up and we can begin to distinguish things arising and passing so quickly. And we really are seeing the momentariness of phenomena. And I've thought about this a lot in the last few days because the front of our house has big windows and we see a lot of sky. I mean, a lot of sky. And the best part of seeing the sky change throughout the day is seeing the sky change throughout the day, right? From dark to light to dark again. The cloud formations are continuous. And even on a clear day out here in the Pacific Northwest, they almost always have a cloud coming by. Things come into view and recede from view. We see container ships going into to the port of Tacoma. They come and go. Some days I can see an area called Federal Way across the bay, and some days I can't. Some days I see Mount Rainier. It seems to emerge from the clouds, and some days it's as if it's not even there. The sky in front of me, I'm so grateful for, because it helps to bring that awareness of seeing the momentariness of phenomenon into reality, into a kind of almost not quite concrete reality in my daily life. Ideally, we develop a meditation practice that enhances our capacity for noticing. But on the show, I've talked often about other kinds of practices because, to be frank, not everyone's comfortable sitting on a pillow on the floor for 20 minutes. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I do it every day. But it's not always a place that people want to start. And yet, I think it's so important. It may not be meditation, but it can be mindfulness. And how can we bring Goldstein's ideas about noticings per minute into those kinds of daily practices? So one of the practices I often mention is making the bed. And maybe you grew up like me where you barely made the bed. You did it enough to not get yelled at by your mom. I am now a person who makes the bed with a lot of care. And one of the things that's very important to me about this, and I didn't think of it this way until I read this talk from Goldstein, is that I've been doing this for several years now, and I'm always surprised to notice how much I can continue to notice about making the bed. If I am really present to it, and I'm not always, right? I do get distracted. I go down memory lane, or I get onto my mental to-do list for the day. But when I'm really in the presence of the presence of the present and making the bed, I can be extremely aware of differences in the texture of sheets, of how the bed and the top of the bed gets, you know, sheet gets folded over a blanket, how wide that is, how narrow that is, how that changes from day to day, right? The bed more or less looks the same every day, but it's actually not the same every day. Goldstein talks about this too in breathing. And this was kind of surprising to me because I'd never thought of it before, but when we talk about focusing on breath, we tend to say, you know, inhalation and exhalation, breathe in, breathe out, as though that thing, that 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe seconds or moments that pass on an inhalation, that they're all the same. But if you really slow down as you are doing that, you notice the difference in the breath at the beginning, the breath in the middle, the breath at the top, as well as all the way back out through the exhalation, that it is not the same moment. It is a series of moments, and they're passing beyond us in those moments. And the same with making the bed, the same with cooking a meal, the same with any kind of practice where I can bring my full attention to the present moment. I can really try to just be nowhere but in that moment with that activity that I'm engaged in. And the reason for doing it is that as we become more comfortable with recognizing the momentariness of phenomena, then, as Goldstein points out, it can ease our sense of attachment to those phenomena, right? So it's one thing to have a to-do list. It's another to cling to the to-do list and to what it means in terms of who we are. If I can ease my attachment to the things on that list, then I can be less committed to only one right outcome, right? I can be more comfortable with things unfolding in a way other than perhaps I would have expected or anticipated or even liked when I wrote that item on my list. I can perhaps bring more awareness to whether or not that's something that I want on my list. Is it even an appropriate thing to have on my list? And maybe I can bring more attention to how I feel when I see that thing on my list. Right, I can notice what happens in my body. Do I feel joy and lightness and ease, or do I feel that rolling discomfort deep in my gut? Do I feel a tightness in my chest when I look at that item? What is that telling me? And where do my thoughts go when I see that item? And is it a place of that will feel so good, that that's exactly how I want to be spending my time, or is it I've got to do it? That's what's expected of me. They'll be so disappointed in me if I don't. They'll judge me so harshly. What will other people say if I can't get this thing done? That's where we link the kind of meditative or mindfulness practice of bringing our attention to it so that we can really start to notice that everything that can arise will pass, and that there is a momentariness to all phenomena, no matter how fixed in place they may seem, no matter how rigid the expectations are, our relationship to it, our understanding of it, the meaning that we give to it, all of that's going to change. And if we can remind ourselves of that through these kinds of mindfulness practices, the slowing down, then we have some ability to ease our attachment, to not cling so tightly to something that we may or may not actually want to do. Meditation, yes, but also this daily mindfulness practice. It may not be as deep as meditation, but it can prepare us for that and can give us a practice in slowing down, staying in the present moment, observing what arises and what is true without judgment. What is true without judgment, that feeling, those thoughts that we have, is this who I want to be? Is this how I want to spend my time? We don't always have to bring a strong yay or nay, thumbs up or thumbs down, despite how pervasive thumbs up and thumbs down are in our culture. That doesn't have to be part of our reaction. It can simply be the observation of what is, how we feel about in our bodies when we see what is, and where our minds go. And then asking ourselves, is this where I want to be? So we are going to go a little early, I think, to our final break, if that's okay, Jacob.
No problem.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we're going to do that. And then when we come back, we're going to just wrap up for today. And thank you for joining me. I'll look forward to seeing you after the break on Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Mind to Heart with me, Craig Richardson, carves a pathway from your mind to your heart to activate that innate compass to overcome whatever life sends your way. As an intuitive life coach, I am ready to guide you to an amazing life. Tune in live every second and fourth Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about me, visit CraigERichardson.com.
How do you feel? Just okay? Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with The Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
When was the last time you had that feeling that you knew something, but you couldn't explain how you knew it? How powerful would it be for your life and business if you could consciously tap into that magic within you? What if you could remember that there's something supernatural about you? Tune in to Absolute Alignment with Christelle Biga, When Success Feels Easy, every first and third Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire. And today we've been talking about to-do lists, either the one you might make day to day to help keep track and focused and momentum about how the things you do with your daily life, or some of the maybe the lifeless that you have, and wanting to discern the difference between writing things down so that we don't forget because we want to do them versus a list that becomes oppressive in and of itself for one of two reasons, either because it feels like a set of mandates from the outside that may have nothing to do with what your authentic self desires and how your authentic self would like to live, or because even if you like the stuff on the list, your attachment to those things on the list, and particularly, I think, to those things happening in a particular way, causes suffering because you're clinging so tightly to something that is in itself and inevitably impermanent, that it passes, that it changes. With this topic, I sometimes think about students I used to work with, and at one school in particular that seemed to draw a particular kind of student who would come to me in the first semester in a first-term seminar and show me their four-year plan. And I don't mean, you know, I'm hoping to major in this and I want to study abroad maybe and maybe have an internship, but here are the classes I plan to take every term and what time they're offered. And the, having to, you know, break a young person's heart by saying, this is going to change. You're going to change. It's going to change. The opportunities are going to change. And that class that's being taught at 8 o'clock now might not be still be being taught at 8 o'clock in the morning in your senior year. Although we learn the lesson of impermanence over and over and over again in our life, it can be incredibly difficult to bring it into the present moment and to really live with that practice, that idea that there is constant change. And so we've been talking about Joseph Goldstein's idea of noticing's permanent and using a meditation practice or a mindfulness practice to really come to terms with, to really be in the presence of the present and notice all that is shifting, even in the smallest gestures like an inhalation and an exhalation, even in the smallest activities, the most routine activities like making the bed, the way that the whole process changes from the beginning to the end of that, how it changes from day to day, how many things there are to notice in our most routine activities and how that can help us be less tightly clinging to our sense of accomplishments and our sense that our value as a human being rests on what it is we can accomplish. So we're asking ourselves, as Jack Kornfield does, can we drop below our stories? I love that expression. Can we drop below our stories? Those stories that we tell ourselves about what the items on our to-do list mean. It's not a question of whether or not we want to accomplish them, although that's certainly important, but can we drop below the story that says our value as a human being rests on whether or not we accomplish any particular item on that list? That's the story that I'm hoping that you'll drop below and think about and practice bringing your full attention to the present moment without judgment and noticing when whatever form it takes, sitting and watching the sky, brushing your teeth, breathing, noticing impermanence in every moment, the momentariness of every phenomenon, as Goldstein says. So, these are the kinds of things that I talk to clients about in my work as a life coach. And if you'd like to learn more about my work, you can email me or visit my website. My website is mcguirelifecoach.com. And you can email me at maryangelamcguire@gmail.com. That first conversation is complimentary, and we'll talk about what you'd like to achieve through coaching. I'll describe what is an inquiry method of coaching that I use with clients, where my only real job is to ask, how's your life? And to let you focus on what it is in your daily life that may be causing suffering or discomfort. And my job is to kind of listen you into understanding yourself, being a student of your own mind, so that you can make the kinds of changes that you may want to make in your life. In that first conversation, we'll have a short session because that will help you determine if working with me will serve your needs. So my website, mcguirelifecoach.com, my email address, maryangelamcguire@gmail.com. Next week, I'm going to go further with the Goldstein article because once you start to get to really bringing yourself to terms with the impermanence, the momentariness of all phenomenon, the impermanence of every aspect of our lives, then you get to that Buddhist concept of selflessness. And it's hard. Again, simple. I can explain it quoting Joseph Goldstein in a sentence. But to really bring it to bear, to allow it ourselves to absorb it and to bring it to an understanding of it into our daily life, that's very difficult. And so I want to talk about that because I want to get better at that. And so I hope you'll join me as we do talk about that. So until next week, I hope that you will remain curious about your mind. I hope you will be kind and compassionate to yourself, because that will allow you to be kind and compassionate to the rest of the world. I hope that you can disarm yourself internally so that you can bring that kind of inner idea of disarmament into the greater world and peace into the greater world. So thanks for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope you'll join me next week.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.